Hey everyone! We're proud to announce once again that our favorite product, Notion, sponsors this week's Tech-ish. You hear us talk about the future of work all the time on this podcast, and we don't go a minute into that conversation without mentioning Notion.
And let's give you the Tech-ish breakdown. Notion is the one app you and your team can use for notes, docs, wikis, projects, and generally staying on the same page in these weird, weird times. We even use it ourselves here at Tech-ish, so much in fact that people thought we were sponsored by them. Back in the day. The real secret sauce is that you can use Notion for pretty much all of your core work functions and customize it to fit exactly the way your team works. So you'll get all the more done the way you want. We even use it to write and share our own show notes, organize live events, and run our partnership and sales.
Honestly, we use it for about 20 different things, at least. Imagine replacing 20 different tools that you use every day and probably pay for every month. So say goodbye to Google Docs and all those random tools folks are using and build the workflows you want in Notion together. You have to see how zen this app is. It proves that work can be beautiful. Just click the link in the show notes to sign up today. You'll see what work's going to look like in the future. Only you'll have it now. Learn more at notion.so.
Yo, everyone, welcome back. Brand new Tech-ish. It's a familiar voice, or one that was missing last week, but is now back. Michael Behane, and I'm with...
Abba Jesse, not flying solo this week.
Man, how was it? How was solo?
I held down the fort. I don't know if you've seen the cascade of reviews that came in following that solo episode, but I'll share some of them with you. Quite a few people said that it was, you know, an unforgettable episode for them.
So. They were like, "Yo, man, cut him loose.
No, it was weird. It was weird doing it on my own because, like, I would say something and then there wasn't anyone fighting me back on that, and I was like, "What? Oh, okay. I'm just going on." Undebated. All of my points of view are undebated. This is awesome.
It was very funny listening to you laugh at your own jokes. I was like, oh my days, this is like, I was just like, come on, fam, you can't do that. But anyways, you know what? You did your thing. You held it down. But yeah,
I'm always laughing at my own jokes. You should know this about me by now.
You do, yeah, you really do. So,
Grammy.
Okay, let's start with the Grammys. You know what? I didn't even follow the actual award ceremony. Who won? I think I know Beyonce basically won the most amount of like Grammys for any kind of female artist. Correct me if I'm wrong.
And so Beyonce. Blue Ivy, her daughter, hello, youngest ever Grammy winner.
Yo, man, you know what? I love it, but nepotism does irk me, even when it is black nepotism. But yeah, shout out to that, whatever.
Good I'm rooting for everybody Ivy. Black. It's a race.
Yeah, so, but the thing that was really interesting was a couple of the comments that The Weeknd made. I think he had an album out this year, shows how hip I am to kind of pop culture. He had an album out.
Don't act like you didn't jam to that. I didn't jam to that.
This is the thing, like with modern technology, you can listen to basically what you want to listen to. Like I don't listen to many new releases unless it's like something that I'm particularly excited about. But anyways.
24/7.
Yeah, so he complained, essentially, not Nipsey, he's dead, rest in peace. The Weeknd complained that his music was snubbed. He didn't get any nominations for quite a successful album. And now he basically is saying he's no longer going to submit his music to any future Grammys. He claims that it's all political, that essentially you've got to kind of shake hands and kiss babies.
Political?
Yeah, but the thing is, these award shows kind of pretend that they're kind of really fair and neutral. Yeah, and like objective. But apparently it really is. You got to kind of just kiss a whole lot of ass basically to get there. So what's your thoughts on people snubbing the Grammys? Do we need the Grammys? Do we need these gatekeepers? What do you think?
We do not need the Grammys. We do not need these status symbols. Oh. They're useless. All of these Forbes 30 under 30, blah, blah, blah. We've spoken about this on the show before. Like there's a lot of socialization happening when we continue to perpetuate the culture of awards. And don't get me wrong. I know what the science says around the value of recognition in terms of motivating people to perform at their best. Like I get that recognition is important, but something about these institutions is just inherently white supremacist and patriarchal. You know what I mean? Like a lot of these didn't even have a category for like female artists until like a few years after their inception. And let's face it, the world is changing. Is there like a non-binary award? Like what happens if you don't assign to any of the traditional gender identities? Can you now not win a Grammy? I don't know. Like they feel ancient to me. And don't get me wrong. I think they still have value. And I think, you know, I love that Zendaya won an Emmy. I love that Beyonce is winning Grammys, but I think that they should be lowered in terms of like how we view them amongst other things that a person does. Does that make sense? What do you think?
I agree. I think the Forbes under 30 comment made me laugh though, just because we never won, so that's why we hate it. You know?
I'm aiming for the 50 under 50.
I agree. It's not necessary. But tell a lie, if I was a musician, would I have one eye towards it? I probably would. It's only human, right? And that's...
Do you see me turning down awards, Michael? Do you see me turning down awards?
But yeah, I know, But I think once you get into that, I think it can really affect people's mental health as well, in terms of that outside validation starts becoming not a nice to have, but starts becoming a prerequisite to kind of your own view of yourself, right? So you got to be careful. Shout out to The Weeknd. I respect the move. I think he's right. I think more artists need to kind of just say, even if they haven't themselves personally been snubbed, and just say, you know what, this ain't right. I'm not effing with this.
I honestly do not understand that logic though. I don't understand. Like, why was The Weeknd not nominated for any single thing?
So I think he didn't play the game. He didn't, you know, do the whole thing behind the scenes, going to the right parties. I mean, I don't know what parties there were during lockdown, but he weren't doing the
making
political
certain
thing.
Donations, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, it could be that corrupt. It could be
the last time
I
was just gonna say, the last time I actually watched the Grammys was way back when. I don't even know. I think I was like, 2018 or something. Mm. And I remember watching it and just being like, I don't even know half these tracks, because it was like country and like all these other genres I never listened to. The fact that they didn't nominate The Weeknd just shows they don't really know what they're talking about.
And also, I don't know how many people actually sat down and watched this award show. So. Mm. While they're slipping in terms of who they're giving the awards to, they're also slipping in terms of relevance. Like, we're kind of millennial, so I can't imagine Gen Z is really checking for the Grammys like that. Do they really care? You know what I mean? Like,
we're
so
like
many
old millennials as well, because we're like in our 30s, dude. Like, I don't know about you.
I'm 25, dude. I'm 25. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm
man,
15 years old.
But yeah, cool. Shout out to the Grammys. See how long you got left. let's stick to music. Quick story. I know last week I wasn't here, you mentioned Jay-Z selling Tidal to Square, and the other acquisition that was quite prominent that week, similar space, or kind of similar space, music related, was Versus. So this is the company that Timbaland and Swiss Beat set up. If you've been following during lockdown, there's been all these kind of like battles between different artists. This has all been orchestrated by Timbo and Swiss Beats. I didn't realize it was a company. I thought it was kind of just like, yo man, we're having fun during lockdown, but capitalism stays winning, boy. They turned it into a company, and they've now sold it to Triller, which is the music app, kind of in the vein of TikTok. I think it's like a TikTok predator. I think they're kind of like, we're TikTok, but we're American. Basically, that's their USB. Like, we're not Chinese, we're American. I think Triller was the number one app at one point when TikTok was threatened to be banned. But I think it's kind of...
I remember when that was popping.
Yeah, so I just want to commend the two artists for monetizing the platform and selling it. And then the other thing that I really love is that they gave equity to all of the performers who had taken part in the show. So, you know, DMX, I think he battled Snoop. So everyone got equity. I think 43 different artists got equity. And I think that's commendable, because so often black artists just don't get any equity. It's just like, yeah, man, here's your trinket. Here's your advance. You're getting clout. You're getting limelight for this, but you're not getting any kind of real ownership. So shout out to Timbo and Swiss Beats. I really appreciate that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Do you know how they monetize it? Like, do you know how they're making money?
I don't know. I know the ratings are through the roof. So I don't know. I've never sat down and watched one full one, but I'm assuming there must be some kind of ad partnership thing involved. There must be some kind of brand endorsement. There must be. I'm not sure on the early ones, but definitely now they must do. And I mean, to be honest, maybe they did it Silicon Valley style, which is, we're not going to monetize this, we're just going to sell it. Do you know what I mean? And that's what they've done. They've done it. Yeah,
I also saw their like Triller. It looks like Triller also makes money from like pay-per-view on-demand content. So it looks like they've been selling stuff that way.
Yeah, they're pivoting towards live, I think. So last week, ABBA didn't talk about the story. I think she was saving it for me to get here.
I was.
Megan with Oprah. So are we going to have a real family in a couple of weeks? Is it game over? Like, what's happening here? Like, What's your perspective on all of this kind of?
I mean, I'm not smelling the sense of revolution just yet. I don't think we're going to be having any beheadings in Parliament, overthrowing of a government. But I do think that we could be maybe actually finally being a part of a systems change. You know, I think people are seeing establishment for what it is. in a way they've never seen it before. And I think people are connecting the dots a bit better. You know, I think people are now starting to see what abuse of power looks like and what happens when the biases that exist in really powerful individuals, monarchy, etc., feeds into the institutions that they run and dominate, whether that's the media, you know, which controls popular opinion. You know, everyone was probably as shocked as I was to watch the clip of Meghan telling Oprah that at one point she was so isolated and traumatized by the experiences of racism, she considered ending her own life. And this is the true cost of discrimination and prejudice. We don't talk about it enough, but it literally kills. It costs lives. And I don't know. I've lived in this country so long. I'm a citizen now. It's part of the furniture, racism, let's face it. It's part of the furniture. And I think there are a lot of people who are probably going to defend the monarchy and be like,
oh, yeah,
well, why shouldn't we be white? We're a white country, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think it's good that they left because I doubt they were going to change anything. And I don't think anything's going to change here for a while.
Yeah, good for them. I hope they continue to exist. To do their thing. I think they've got a Netflix deal and a Spotify deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Arshel, yeah. They have a podcast. I haven't listened to it yet, but sure.
Yeah, I don't know what that podcast is going to be saying. I'm not going to say that.
Mixed race relationship.
But you know what? I will say that to a certain extent, it did make me realize that the people that you think are in charge are not often the ones actually in charge, because it did seem like they were like, well, the Queen is wonderful, but the establishment, the firm, you're thinking to yourself, then who are you talking about? Who are these people, like, behind the scenes kind of thing? And yeah, I think in politics, it's a similar dynamic. I think presidents and politicians are beholden to their donors and other kind of vested interests. So it just made me realize, because the buck guess doesn't stop with the Queen. There's somebody that is telling the Queen what to do, maybe. I don't know, like, because the way they were defending the Queen, but at the same time, constantly throwing shots at the actual institution. So who are you referring to, if not but her? Anyway, I just thought that was fascinating. The shot callers behind the scenes.
But it's not the Queen, is it? It's the Crown.
Yo, someone's been watching the Crown on Netflix.
Because it's true, isn't it? It's like the Queen on a personal level could empathize with their experience and not condone it. But ultimately, the Queen is the Crown and she represents the Crown. And that's the opinion that overrides everything. And we know her husband has some problematic views about people that are different to him. Because we've seen all of those blunders very famously, you know, played out across the world stage. I think we now should almost just operate from a policy of like racist and abusive until proven otherwise. And I don't mean this, I'm not saying like we now need to be like cynical and like all this kind of stuff, but I think we just need to appreciate that these systems are so entrenched and our perception of reality is so defined by our experience as we move through them. Yeah, there are people that just don't get it. And if they do get it, they're fine with it. And they're just like, what's so bad about that? I was even seeing some conversations unfolding online where people are just like, oh, would you have someone from a foreign land rule your nation? I was like, what?
Oh, God.
What,
you know,
even
the,
is,
you know, the Queen is German, by the way. Did you realize that the royal family is German? Like, I don't know. Insane. Anyway, and Prince Philip is Greek as well. So, yeah, anyway.
Nothing makes sense. You can't fight racism or other isms with logic, because the ism in and of itself ain't making no sense. So, you know, just look after yourself, people. Look after yourself.
And I mean, to be honest, I said I wouldn't accept an MBE. Abba said she would. So, you know, everybody give me kudos. I was right. I called it. I called it from the jump.
I'm still take that. I'm holding out for like a knighthood or something. I want that kind of like, I skip the queues at immigration. if I get stopped by the popo, I flash the badge kind of power. That's what I want.
Madame Abadesi. Now, you know what? If I was, if they said to me, MBE stands for Member of Black Excellence, then we could talk, but I'm not. And a member of the British Empire. I'm sorry, I can't take that one. Anyway.
Why don't Harry and Meghan set up their own like flyaway kingdom? Richard Branson can sell them an island. Yep. They can start a new monarchy there. They'll give you Member of Black Excellence.
I'll wait for that day then. I'll wait for that day. Shout out to Harry and Meghan. So, quick story on Clubhouse. I think Twitter Spaces has, I think, not got them shook, but it's kind of got them thinking, what do we do to kind of stay ahead of the curve? And now they come up with like an accelerator program for creators. So they will help around 20 creators get their own show off the ground. They'll give them whatever they need in terms of equipment. And then get them brand partnerships. If they can't get them a brand sponsor, they will give them basic income of $5,000 a month. I mean, US dollars, at least for the 3 months during the kind of program. And I think they're trying to, I think Mark Andreessen and Andreessen Horowitz in general, they've got a show called like Sunday Good Times. I think that's the one where Elon's turned up.
Oh, okay.
Zuckerberg turned up, right? So I think they're trying to kind of replicate that success by having kind of regular formatted shows with regular hosts that can kind of come in. What do you think? Is this a way to kind of kindle your network to kind of like, you know, start the fire and do it kind of not organically, just like, just say like, you know what, we're going to push people to do it, like pay them?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's showing just how heated the space is now for like influencer real estate. Yeah. Everyone's like, be on my platform. No, be on my platform. No, be on my platform. Be on my platform. What was that platform that Taylor Lorenz was writing about the other day? I sent you a link to it. Where it's like name or face or something like that. And it's like you are an influencer, but then people can like vote on what you do. And it's almost like The Sims or some madness like that.
No clue, bro. This is
anyway.
I'm old. I don't know this.
I'll pop the article in the show notes, but this to me is a signal that the social media landscape is like really heating up. And that this birth of influencers, thought leaders, monetizing my brand, monetizing my voice isn't going anywhere. Like we're probably still very early in this market. And you know, I'm not talking about like influencers, like here, hashtag ad. This is my favorite oat milk brand or whatever. I'm talking about
the creator economy, basically.
Exactly, the creator economy. There are going to be people hosting open mic nights on Clubhouse. There are going to be people, you know, trying out new material as stand-ups, as musicians, as all sorts of things. And I think it's really sensible for them to try and build content for the platform the way Netflix might have if Netflix hadn't started as, you know, rental of physical media and had just been like a digital first platform. So, you know, I saw someone like saying how like they're hiring producers at Clubhouse. Like, yeah, I think they're really trying to make like a play for being a media platform and supporting the content that's created there. Perhaps this is also clever in the sense that it sets the bar high for the quality that they want. Do you know what I'm saying? Like Facebook grew, well, like a mishmash kind of ways and, you know, trying so many things, throwing shit at the wall, see what sticks, meant that it's now at a place where like the quality of stuff has been called into question. And that's meant people have permanently left that platform, right? So I don't know. I think it's kind of, I think it's sensible, but I don't think this alone is going to protect them from, you know, the fact that Twitter's got a competitor product out. And I don't know, I feel like I'm just going to open up Instagram tomorrow and there's going to be some kind of Clubhouse feature there. So
I mean, they've got a feature now where you can invite at least up to 4 people to an Instagram live. So it's not the same. It's not audio only, but I'm sure they could do that if they wanted to. But I think it's getting to be much of a muchness where I feel like if you can have multiple people on an IG live, although it's a different texture, it's just another alternative to kind of having group conversation. So I think, I think it's a smart strategy from Clubhouse. I just think that you're right. It does reflect that the market and space is kind of heating up very quickly. They've only got 12 million users. It's not as if they've scaled up to hundreds of millions of users. It's like within the space of months, really.
But they're engaged probably, and that's probably just as valuable. So is the plan that they're going to be a bit like Patreon or Gumroad, where people are going to be using their platform and monetizing directly on the platform and they're going to get a cut of that? Is that what they're hoping for in terms of revenue?
I think they're going to experiment and see what sticks.
Got it.
So I'm sure there's going to be brand partnerships. There's probably going
to be... Let's apply. Do a techish thing.
I'm too rich, man. $5,000 a month ain't enough. And I'm joking. Yeah,
that's
why not?
Good point, actually. How much do they need from us?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're going to be like, yo, can you be on there 24/7? I can't do that. My mental health. Clubhouse is a disaster for mental health. I go in there and I just like, there's so much rich.
Damn, the arguments. I went into some like ratchet ass chat yesterday, like, why are black men not safe on Clubhouse? I was like, let me just slide on in this. Like 5,000 people screaming at each other.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the game. Hey everyone, we are proud to announce that collaboration company Notion is the sponsor of this week's Techish. Imagine the most zen tool possible for taking notes, managing docs and projects, and storing all of your team's info. I promise you it's real. Notion brings together all those functions in one place where your team can customize how you work together so you get more done and actually enjoy it at the same time. It's possible, everyone. The future's here.
Hundreds of thousands of teams have already seen the difference this tool makes to productivity, transparency, and engagement. People love it.
But you know what else? If I wasn't silly enough, to be a founder, I'd love to work on a product at the intersection of beautiful design and utility, and that's Notion to a T.
And lucky for you, they're hiring a ton across engineering, product, design, marketing, customer experience, and more. You can help build the future of work for millions of people around the world. Go to www.notion.so/careers and get applying. Link is in the show notes.
So Spain is experimenting with a 4-day work week apparently now. So they're going to do a trial run. I know we've talked about 4-day work weeks many times before, but this has actually been implemented. And what they're going to do, which I think is quite clever, they're going to help companies and subsidize it essentially. So it's a 4-day work week, but you're getting paid 4 times money. So obviously not every company is going to be able to kind of handle that, right, in terms of their bank balance. So the fact that the government will go in there and help, I think it's a good thing. I think from the employee point of view, it's absolute no-brainer. Everyone's gonna love it. Like I would have loved it if I had a job and it was like, yo man, 4 days, like, why not?
4 days,
like,
baby.
Yeah, because a weekend is not enough, let's keep it real. By the time you settled in, by the time you've done your thing, you've chillaxed on a Friday and then Saturday, you're like, it's done. It's basically, you need a few days. You need a day to kind of settle in to acknowledge the fact that you're off. Mm. And then 2 days of off time. You know what I mean? What do you think about a 4-day work week?
I'm here for it. I'm always trying to work smarter, not harder, as you well know, my friend.
No, you're a workaholic. You lie. I've been at your house. I've been working until like 9:45, still typing away. One more email. One more. I'm like, Abba, man, let's just come on, see. It's over. Let's begin again the next day.
I just do think we need to move towards this direction. Like, sorry, who the frick invented 9 to 5? It ain't even 9 to 5, it's like 9 to 7 or whatever. Yeah. 5 days a week. And then, like, this has been around for so many decades, before the internet, before distributed working, before like cloud-based collaboration. Like, hello society, let's review this. Like, yeah, let's review this. Also, back in the day when it was 9 to 5, like, I watched Mad Men, I see how Don Draper rolls. You'd be swanning in, have a bit, yep, of a chat, have a few cigarettes, have a whiskey,
lunch meeting,
lunchtime meeting, play a bit of golf, go home. I was, yeah, like, what? Okay, now you have me strapped to my freaking desk with my MacBook in front of me, Zoom zombie here, day in, day out. I was like, no. You know, apparently we're not even supposed to look at a screen uninterrupted for longer than like half an hour or something. I'm here like 9 hours a day wondering why my prescription is different. No, like, I mean, I should probably fact check that, but it's like, you shouldn't look at a screen for too long. Yeah, for longer than, it's literally like to half an hour or something like that, because your eyes need to like look at different distances, yeah, and all this kind of stuff.
It makes sense. Even if it's not.
I'm here for it. To be honest, I'm waiting for someone to be really revolutionary and just be like, get your stuff done when you need to get it done. I don't care when you work, just make it happen. And I think there are some companies that probably go down that route a little bit, maybe smaller ones, but I would love a company where it's just like, this is the only day of the week where we need to vaguely be synchronized, and the rest is just on you. Off you go. Goodbye. Sayonara. See you later.
Yeah, it's a separate topic, but like, I'm seeing the kind of dichotomy between the companies as we end lockdown, lockdown kind of comes to an end, who just can't wait to get everybody back into the office. So I've got friends of mine who work within kind of older companies or in the public sector, and they're like, if you've been vaccinated, get your ass in, basically. And like, my friends are like, I ain't been vaccinated. Damn. Probably before they've been vaccinated, basically. I shouldn't expose them like that. But basically, people are like, you know, they're being forced to go back into a non-remote world. And a lot of people have been kind of kick dragging and screaming back into that. Yeah. So I just think I think in general, there's just going to be a dichotomy between the companies that are kind of forward thinking, that are going to try things like this. I know Treehouse did this at one point. They stopped eventually though, and I think unless it's like a unilateral thing, like unless it's like, yeah, I don't think companies want to kind of disarm unilaterally. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, so if I'm a competitor to Hustle Crew and you guys are crushing it, am I want to go 4 days a week? Probably not. But if you're 4 days a week because the government says you have to be 4 days a week, then we can get talking, right? Do you know what I mean? I'm sorry to put my entrepreneur hat on, but it's just the reality that people like who are kind of business owners, they're the kind of ones that factor into this kind of decision making.
But you could also argue that like if you have like a well set up team, well optimized team, you could get more out of good people in 4 days than you could out of like others, yeah, who aren't as set up for success in 5.
I think it depends like where your company is. Like, there's sometimes you're the peacetime CEO and sometimes you're the wartime CEO. Like, if you're during peace where you've got a company that's got a stable moat, There's no one really coming in the horizon to take you out. You're doing your thing. You've got a good business model. You're profitable. I think at that stage, yeah, four days a week. Why the hell not? But the reason why Treehouse stopped it, and I saw the CEO, Ryan Carson, talk about it. He was had an acquisition offer, like a rival company. And they were like, yo, man, like you either sell to us or we're going to kill you. Like, we're just going to destroy your company. Like, you're not going to exist anymore. We're going to cut our prices, everything, clone you. You're done. So sell to us now or whatever. And he was like, are you serious? And the guy's like, yeah. And he's like, all right, cool, guys. Four days. We're back to five. That's it. Back to hustling. Otherwise, the company doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I don't know how true it is that would have been the end result. But I just meant that there are certain times in a company's, you know, history where maybe 4 days ain't going to cut it. But if the government forces everyone to do it, then I'm on board, kind of thing, as an employer. Mm. Anyways. Quick review time. MListens 3000 says, insightful AF. Turkish has quickly become one of my favorite podcasts. I'm not even sure how I stumbled upon it, but I'm so glad I did. The hosts are super smart, engaging, and insightful AF. Loved it. Shout out to MListens 3000. Thank you for supporting. And yeah, I don't know how you stumbled upon us as well, but I'm glad that you did. Much love. Whoop.
If you're listening on an iPhone or an Apple podcast, please leave us a review because we love to see them.
Yep. And that brings the episode to a close. Hit us up on @TechishPod on Instagram and Twitter. Those accounts are blowing up, so we would love to see you there. Also, subscribe to our Patreon for extra-ish, for extra content. There's a lot of new content on there for our exclusive subscribers. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
I missed you all. I'm glad to be back. Peace.
Yay.